The Tom Woods Show, episode 2091.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you enjoy the Tom Woods Show, it's time to go to the next level. And next level, Tom Woods, is libertyclassroom.com. This is where my friends and I teach all the stuff you did not get in your conventional education, history, economics, and more, the way it ought to be taught, with all the content they left out or distorted. Check it out at libertyclassroom.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. This is like a part two to our episode yesterday, 2090, joined once again by independent filmmaker Jason Rink. And we talked last time about the subject matter of what he's been working on, namely the so-called Stop the Steal movement, which he thought was worth chronicling, and also, of course, the events of January 6th. And so what I want to talk about today, though, is less the content than what's happened to Jason almost at every turn in more or less just talking about these issues. I mean, really, with the January 6th stuff, why would it be not possible just to say, here's my take on this? Like, what would be dangerous about that? Nobody can really give a good explanation. So, Jason, let's get into this. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks. Good to be with you again, Tom. And, you know, I do want to lay out a little bit of some groundwork here in that, you know, we've really seen over the last several years, I feel like some of us are almost taking for granted the social media censorship and clampdown that's going on right now. It's almost like it's just a given now, but it's rather new. Like, it really just started ramping up in the days of COVID. When that narrative started getting out, we really started to see some things happening that we hadn't really seen before. And then I believe that carried out under, you know, Trump's campaign and, you know, things that happened where, you know, even the Hunter Biden laptop story got censored 3 weeks before the election. And big tech seemed to be doing these different things that were, you know, shifting the table in a more obvious way towards certain narratives. I mean, I think a lot of us know that corporate media and big tech have likely been on the same side of the regime for a long time. And they've put their thumbs on the scales in the past, but it seems like something got ramped up over the last few years. And so, those things being the sort of context, when we started doing our film on the steel and the Stop the Steal movement, and then on January 6th, while we were making it, you know, didn't think we were going to really run into extreme censorship or, you know, where we were going to lose any social media accounts. But what really happened was, as soon as January 6th went down and the media began to paint that narrative of it being worse than 9/11 and the Civil War combined, the assault on the citadel of democracy, I think is what Joe Biden called it, you know, where this narrative made it out like it was the greatest American tragedy that ever happened, when in fact, you know, the people who died that day as a result of it were actually, most of them or all of them were protesters. There's a lot of circumstances surrounding the Capitol Police and things that are questionable around what caused that. But the point being that the narrative of January 6th was such that it created a pretext or a context in order to censor anything that had to do with January 6th, anything that had to do with the Stop the Steal movement, anything that had to do with election protest. And so, sure enough, all of the topics that we were talking about in both of these films were wrapped up into this one package. And for us, it all started when we released our first trailer on the Q Sent Me movie, which is our January 6th movie about the Q shaman, the Buffalo Man who got in the Senate. And that was the first time that I personally lost an account. And so I lost my Facebook account, which had over 4,000 followers I'd built up for over a decade. And my Twitter account, which I'd had a couple thousand followers and been using for a long time, posting a YouTube trailer from that film got both of those accounts shut down and shut down permanently. I technically cannot get another account on those platforms ever again. I have no appeal process. It wasn't something where I could just have removed the post. I was now a person that is not allowed to be on those platforms moving forward.
When you say that this stuff really ramped up recently, it's easy to forget that because it's become part of our world so quickly to expect that you have to really be very discriminating about what you put on YouTube these days. As you know, with my show, I have a YouTube version that has no video in it, just a still shot. Mm-hmm. But I figure I'll put it up there for anybody who might find it there and, you know, get a few thousand more people listening. But these days, given the status of my channel, I have to decide. So, for example, the episodes with you, I can't feature on YouTube.
Yeah.
I don't dare. And so to look back at the things that people like you and I were saying about YouTube, let's say back in 2010, just seems impossibly naive now. And it's very easy to forget that this is a fairly recent development. So they took your account away without possibility of appeal, even though the appeal is very unlikely too, but it was just, that's it?
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because I've been in the middle of this process on several platforms now, because since over the last, year and couple of months, we've had accounts shut down. We've had an entire YouTube channel taken down. TikTok has also banned a channel for us. Just talking about this content, it's either January 6th or the election. And then, you know, even the video platform Vimeo, which is a real escalation, I just was banned for life from there. And the problem they had was some videos that were even private. So they used spreading election misinformation to strike videos that actually weren't publicly available. They were just raw footage from the documentary we were working on. And so Vimeo is less of a public-facing platform for us. It's more of a collaboration platform when you're in the video production industry. And so seeing what's happened is one thing that's come together is that the reasoning is different for all of these things. So where YouTube might say, oh, your video is glorifying or inciting violence because we're doing a documentary on the Q Shaman, right? Twitter, you know, they banned me for violating, quote, spam policy. It was totally absurd. There was no violation of spam policy. They shut me down for that. And then Facebook at the same, really within the same hour when they shut me down, it was just for a generic community standards violation. Now, all of those initial shutdowns happened before these tech platforms kind of had their act together. Because ever since then, you know, because this is early January of 2021, since then, they've kind of, you know, put some language in place to give themselves a little bit more of a, well, here's what you did. But back then, it was really a lot of just, they were just moving really fast to make sure that this stuff wasn't getting out there. And so, you know, it's interesting because I really think that one of the things it did is it actually radicalized me, because I started to recognize that people are going to self-censor and people will not have the opportunity to become a significant voice in alternative media now, because it's like the legs have been cut out from under it. It's much, much more difficult for me to start a podcast now or to start a show now and build audience, because I cannot talk about any of these topics and build an audience on the mainstream platforms. I've got to start on the alternatives. And so I think, you know, Tom, a show like yours, you know, can't even get big now. A show like Joe Rogan or a guy like Tim Pool, I think some people are too big to cancel almost right now. And I think what's happening is they're sort of creating a lack of opportunity now to be able to actually use those platforms to bring these alternative things to light. And I do think that the self-censorship that's happening as a result is a real loss in the discussion.
Well, I had Adam Curry on not too long ago. And we talked about this exact problem, but we also noted that up to now, at least, podcasts seem to have escaped this. That, yes, it's true that you can find the odd podcast episode that's disappeared, but in general, I say whatever I want, and it goes out to my listeners. They can listen on tomwoods.com, they can listen on a podcasting app, which is what most people do, and on that, when I don't need to consult YouTube's, you know, get YouTube's permission to talk about a particular topic, it gets out there. I can do that. But yeah, it has a chilling effect on people. And as I say, now in this day and age, I actually have to decide, can I put this on YouTube or not? Am I going to have my channel removed? It's really very, very difficult. And it's something that, because for so long, all kinds of crazy content was allowed on YouTube. I mean, really. Just, I was shocked at what they allowed on there. And I thought, well, good. Let people hear a wide variety of opinions. That's really great that other people agree with me on this. No longer. But at the same time, it's still small, but Rumble is definitely growing. And to a lesser extent, Odyssey, O-D-Y-S-E-E, which is run by our people. So that's encouraging. But geez, when you have this platform here that has almost the whole world on it and you can't use it, that's incredibly frustrating. It's not good for society because it means we can't talk about things.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the other thing is to recognize that, Tom, you and I both know where we can go to find alternative information. And we're, you know, we're smart guys and we're well read. We understand a lot about American history and we have a certain perspective on the government. But, you know, the vast majority of people out there are actually still consuming a lot of really traditional media to inform their view of the world. And, you know, hey, it's really, really exciting that the mainstream corporate press and social media are so concerned about misinformation. Of course, they really weren't when it came down to, like, you know, lying us into the war in Iraq or all of these other things that have happened in the past, right? So, you know, it's like, we know that they don't care about misinformation. They care about controlling the narrative, right? The problem is that they lost the ability to use the major television networks to do that, which is how they did it for so long, right? And, you know, the internet changed the game. And so now they're trying to put the genie back in the bottle. And I don't know, you know, what's happening behind the scenes. I do know that, you know, many tech companies that are trying to even start alternatives like Getter or what have you, they've still got to censor those platforms because in order to get their app in the Apple Store, Apple App Store, or the Google Play Store or whatever it is, so it can be available on those devices in a very convenient way, a lot of times they cannot, you know, have these controversial topics or figures on those platforms. So you're seeing that it's not just the content itself, it's like the tech backbones that run everything, the AWSs of the world and, you know, all of that. Like, the infrastructure is built in such a way that that is going to prevent, you know, alternative communication and voices from being on there. And this has already happened to people, you know, like Nick Fuentes, who is one of those people that, you know, people love to hate. He's been debanked and, you know, he's been as depersoned as somebody can be online. And it's like, I look at people like him and I say, these are canaries in the coal mine, right? We have to look at what's happening through the corporate press, big tech, and the government to target and silence and marginalize the people that are easy to do that to. And then they start coming for other people. And the thing is as well, and this is really personal to me, is I'm not a huge influencer. I don't have a huge platform. And so when I vanish, you know, nobody says that much. Like, I don't have a lot of people that are coming out and saying, you know, what happened to Jason Rink? It's like, I just sort of vanish and I've got to find a way to get on podcasts and platforms and say, hey, listen, this happened to me. It's happened to thousands and thousands of other people who are too small for people to know what's going on. And so that's the other thing that for me is I'm passionate about is it's like, we're out here trying to make independent films. We're financing them ourselves. We think the stories are important. We think there's huge audiences for them. And I currently have a real struggle to get people to know that these are even happening, to be able to raise money or to be able to sell the product at the end of the day.
All right, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor, Blinkist. Now, I know you've heard me talk about Blinkist before, but listen to me. I'm about to make your life and your brain much better. Now, it's true. By now, many of you know that Blinkist is an app that takes thousands of important nonfiction titles and summarizes them for you in 15-minute so-called blinks that you can either read or listen to. This means they get rid of all the fluff and give you just what you need to know. And you may find you want to read that whole book. You may also find this book would be a waste of my time. Blinkist offers titles on all different subjects from all different perspectives. They even have a book by me, Meltdown. They have Murray Rothbard's For a New Liberty or Economic Facts and Fallacies by Thomas Sowell. Go read that book, then listen to the blink, and the information will stay in your head more effectively. Honestly, I think Sowell is one of the best writers I have ever come across, and he has such a sharp mind, and he's such a great economist, and Blinkist gives you a great way to get your feet wet with Thomas Sowell's material. Right now, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/woods to start your free 7-day trial and get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/woods to get 25% off and a 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/woods. Well, going back to something you said before about you and I know where to look for information, but maybe other people don't, and that really is true, that one of the ways people discovered me back when I used to make videos was they would be on YouTube for something else, and I would be one of the recommended videos. And then so they would just be able to click, and then instantly they're in this whole different world. And so it's not just that it's an inconvenience to my listeners that there could come a day that they can't consume my content on YouTube anymore. It's way more than that. It's people who won't ever find out about me because of that absence. And then secondly, I can't help dissing what I call the blue-pilled libertarians out there who look at something like a Nick Fuentes and they say, and whom I don't know anything about other than apparently he's very offensive. All right, okay, fine, whatever. I just don't understand how anybody cares about stuff like that. But anyway, what they'll say is, well, that's the free market speaking. This is how the free market responds to bigotry and we should be happy. And that's an incredibly juvenile and short-sighted way to think. Because obviously what they are doing is that he's a test. If you get people acclimated to the idea that you can have everything taken away from you, just like that, then they start moving into people who aren't quite as objectionable. And then we get to the situation where we are today, where I'm sitting here trying to run episodes with doctors about COVID, and I can't do that. You know, so nice going. And but of course, the same blue-pilled libertarians don't like those episodes either because they're all listening to Dr. Fauci. So they're hopeless.
Yeah. And Tom, you're touching on something as well. You know, there's the argument, you know, it's like, well, they're private companies, right? You know, whatever that means. And I do think that we're seeing behind the curtain on that argument a little bit, like that maybe that's not quite accurate with these tech companies, you know, and there's a lot of evidence we have that these tech companies have granted special access to government actors and agents to be able to point out and get them to try to take certain things down, that there's a special relationship there. There's also the special relationship that they have where these companies, number one, they need to continue to have investor capital coming in, right? And they also, you know, can be brought before Congress at any given time to have to account for their actions. And the truth of the matter is for most of these companies, it's going to be easier for them to just go along with the, you know, narrative and the plans of the State Department and the federal government, who has the ability to make it very difficult for these tech companies to continue to do business. And so it's just not as easy to look at this and say, yeah, you know, they can do whatever they want. Well, they can do whatever they want. I'm not asking the federal government to step in and do anything, for God's sake, of course. But I do think that some people, especially like you said, these blue-pilled libertarians, are sort of very flippant about what's really happening and what the impact is going to be. And one thing I also want to say, just to speak specifically about, again, Nick Fuentes, because again, I bring him up because he's an interesting figure in this thing. And like when you talk about the free market at work, well, it's funny. I mean, he actually had an event at the same time as CPAC where there was 1,200 people at it. And he live streams every night to 8,000 to 10,000 people on a platform he had to build, you know, from the ground up. And so, you know, I guess one other thing I would say is that the best solution for ideas you don't like isn't to try to squeeze them out and censor them. It's to actually engage with them and talk about them and discuss them and do that out in the open. That's always been the best way. The fact of the matter is when you start pushing things underground or censoring them, sometimes it actually reveals that they actually are more popular or they've got more momentum or, you know, people double down or whatever. And so, you know, I'm just saying, like, I think a lot of those arguments fall really short. And so I say the same thing with myself. I'm like, listen, I know that our film on the Q Shaman around January 6th, it passes the Netflix scroll test. I know that people that aren't political, if they saw that, they'd see the, you know, the Tiger King of politics, essentially, and they'd watch it on a weeknight, you know? I do know there's interest, it's of significance. And so the censoring of it doesn't have anything to do with the fact of the free market, right? It has something else that's bigger going on.
Now, of course, when they do these things, I mean, we can say to them, hey, it's counterproductive for you to ban these voices, but they don't care about that. They want to send a message. And whether it's effective or not is secondary. I think they want to send a message, which is to say to the less brave out there, don't even think about it because look at what's being done to your colleagues. Because there are some of us who would just be out there talking no matter what they do to us. But there are others who are on the margin who could go either way and who just don't want to be treated like this, who don't want to be treated like they're quacks or they don't meet society's standards. I mean, nobody wants to be told these kinds of things. And so some people would just not do it. And that's good enough for them. I think they feel like it shuts down not just what's been produced, but what will be produced in the future. So, I mean, of course, we know that there are alternative platforms that are being built. Those platforms, like something like a Rumble, I feel like it's just a few big events from becoming massive. Like, they need to premiere some major film everybody wants to see, or they need to have some major event take place exclusively on their platform and build a lot of buzz. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
What do you see as the path forward?
Well, and I think, you know, you're right on the money when you talk about things like Odyssey and Rumble. And, you know, I do believe, you know, hey, the market will respond, right? So if there's a business demand here, you know, and there's customers, the market will respond. We're seeing it happen. What I think is that, number one, the response is it takes time. And as we discussed, this is ramped up very quickly. And so I think some of these services aren't quite ready for prime time from the standpoint of, like, we really are talking about changing people's behavior, which is really difficult, right? So getting people to say, hey, I'm going to go to Rumble to do my searches for the stuff I'm looking for. That's going to be the place I go. You know, I'm going to go to, you know, Truth Social or Getter or Gab or whatever as my go-to source for, like, you know, community and engagement and news. You know, there's a lot of reasons that people's behavior isn't doing that as their natural, right? And so part of that has to do with building and network effects. Part of it has to do with, you know, customer user experience, all of these different things that make the difference on a tech company and a product really taking off. But I will say, I think you're also right that it is these events that can happen. You know, like recently, Joe Rogan went on his show and talked about how he was getting on Getter. And, you know, I don't particularly like Getter as a platform, just to say, because actually they have censored quite a bit on there because they want to stay in the app store. And that's what the CEO said when he went on Tim Pool's show, frankly. But, you know, Joe Rogan mentioned them on his show, and, like, I think they got like a million new followers like in 24 hours, right? So adoption can be driven by certain things happening, and that happened because Joe Rogan was running into trouble, you know? And so I feel good about it. I feel optimistic about that. And the other thing is that, you know, I believe from a marketplace standpoint, one of the reasons that I've doubled down on what I'm doing is I think there's a huge underserved market. Eric July talks about this a lot on his show as well. I really love his show. And talks about how creating content and putting it out for the audiences that we know are there, you and I and the people that we all, you know and love, like, that audience is there. They're ready to pay money and support content as long as it is produced at the same level of quality as the other stuff that they're getting out in the marketplace. And so I believe that for a long time, this huge tens of millions of people in the United States, at least, have not been getting some of the kind of content that they want because it's getting woke, you know, all of these different things that they don't want the leftist politics in it. And I'm not saying we have to create specifically right-wing or libertarian stuff. No, just stuff that is, like, not infected with some of the things that have made so much mainstream content terrible, frankly. And so I think there's a huge market opportunity. And I do think that there are going to be platforms. There's going to be a shift happen. I think that we are seeing a very decentralized approach happening right now. Some of these services and platforms are going to rise to the top. They're going to get better. And we're going to start seeing people migrating over there. And one last thing on that point is, for me personally, you know, prior to doing these projects, I still have a commercial production company that we were doing work for the Aston Martins of the world and the Toyotas of the world and all of these big, you know, corporate clients and things like that. And my very decision to decide to pursue these projects and now go on podcasts like yours and talk about what's happening and talk about my positions, it's had a very real effect of closing the door to a lot of professional opportunities that I might want to have. And I've made that decision willfully. I know that that's true. And it's because, number one, I think there's an opportunity over here. I think at the end of the day, I'm going to do work that I love to do more, and I'm going to be rewarded for it. But number two, because I know a lot of people who are in your listening audience and who are out there in the world, they want to be able to speak up. They want to be able to be more vocal, but they can't. They're going to lose their jobs. They're going to have, you know, something happen that's going to impact their finances, their family, whatever it is. And I don't think that's insignificant. I'm not the type of person that I think, like, people lack courage if they don't just speak up and not worry about that. That is not true. I am specifically positioned in a place where I could make that calculation, and I knew that I would be fine from a financial standpoint, from my family standpoint, my work, all of that. But a lot of people don't have that. And so I would say, if you can speak up, if you can be vocal about this, you know, do it. if you can't, if you feel like you're not ready to or whatever, just go out there and support other creators and people who are holding the line in your stead. Support them financially and support them with your listenership or, you know, your patronage, however that is, or spreading the information around, because I think this is going to get worse before it gets a lot better.
Probably so. And yet maybe the way to think about it is to look at the long game. The internet or something like it is going to be around for as long as you can imagine. And it's really, really in its infancy. And so this period of time of readjustment after the elites decided that they do want to control content on this after all is going to seem like a drop in the bucket in the grand scheme of things historically. This will be the blip because there are just too many people who want to use it, the internet, to exchange information and to find out about things. And it is hard to control the whole thing. But I think some of us were naive about the big platforms and so didn't really plan ahead the way maybe we should have it. But when you have a platform like YouTube that doesn't seem to have any intention of censoring on a large scale, I mean, what would be the, who would feel as an entrepreneur, now is the time for me to try to create an alternative to this? It just didn't seem necessary. But now we know it is. And as I say, in the long haul, I mean, if the internet is around for 2,000 years, or again, something like the internet, then, you know, 5 years of adjusting is not going to seem like very much. I mean, to the point where it might not even be barely mentioned in the history of the internet. So I'm hopeful that that's the way it turns out.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there's some interesting developments in the crypto space, decentralization. I know Odyssey, I believe, is sort of backed in that crypto-centric way. And so, you know, again, really in the whole world of tech, Tom, it's like, we are still kind of early. I mean, you know, I'm Gen X. I'm a child of the 80s, right? And it's like the amount of change I've seen in my lifetime around technology and information is staggering. And so I think we're still early. Again, this is why I'm optimistic, like you said. Like, I do think that in the end, the desire for freedom and for free communication and free expression of ideas in organizing and, you know, really us creating the kind of lives that we want to live and leave to the future generations, the desire for human flourishing is there. It can't be snuffed out. And so much of that has to do with, and it's only possible through the free exchange of information and ideas. So I do think that when we do look in the long term, we're going to see some big things happen. We're going to see some events that are going to change consumer behavior. And we're going to see some really, really great platforms and people who have the wherewithal and the courage to stand, who aren't going to be, you know, made to fear because the government is going to, you know, threaten to shut them down or whatever. These tech platforms are going to say, no, it's fine. Great. Here's what we're going to do. Yeah.
Tell people again how they can follow the work you do.
Yeah. So the best place to find me right now is if you go to my website, jasonrink.com, you will find me. You can contact me there. QSentMeMovie.com is the best place to check out the project that's going to launch the first. We are gathering email addresses there to keep people updated. And then I also have a podcast called the Cancel Proof Podcast at cancelproof.tv. People can go there as well. But yeah, and you may find me lurking around some of these platforms I've been banned from. You know, I am doing it in violation of terms of service. When they find me again, they will ban me. They've done it multiple times because I've set up new accounts, but I continue to do so. I feel like I'm being a little bit of a rebel all the time on that. So anyway, if you do find me on those platforms, feel free to reach out and friend me, and I may join you there as well. So, but Tom, this has been great. Really appreciate you giving me the platform to talk about this.
Oh, geez, Jason, it's insane just to think all those years ago when we were hanging out, it never would have occurred to me that we'd be having this conversation today. But these are the cards we've been dealt, and we just need to figure out what's the world we want to live in and what's the path to get there. And just you, by not silencing yourself, are actually helping us get there a little bit faster. So thanks very much for that and for your time.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for today. Tomorrow, we've got Gene Epstein on with us. We haven't talked to Gene in quite a while, and I thought he would be an interesting person to talk to about the price inflation that we're seeing and what's behind it. Of course, we know what's behind it, but let's get into the details. How long it's likely to last, and, you know, maybe if there's anything you can do to try to protect yourself from it as best you can. So you will not want to miss that episode. That episode will be on YouTube, because why not? What are they going to say about that? Also, a quick note, those of you who are in my School of Life over at tomschooloflife.com, I have finalized our in-person event that we're going to have together in July, and I have a very special surprise for you at the end. So keep an eye out for an email from me about how to register for that thing, because we're going to have a blast together in July. How do you have a blast together in July in Florida? You do something indoors. That's what you do, indoors. Anyway, keep your eye open for that email, folks, if you're in that group, and I'll see you all tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.